Hey there, you and I back together on a midweek Wednesday, February 2nd edition 2022 of Connecticut Today. I had a few thoughts on Governor Ned Lamont's election year tax proposals. I offer those to you. We welcome Scott Powell, author of Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. Quinnipiac University Adjunct Professor of Law Gary Phelan chimed in on that class action lawsuit filed against the National Football League by former Miami Dolphins head coach Brian Flores. Courtesy of the Connecticut Network at ct-n.com, we heard part of Governor Ned Lamont's announcement of his legislative proposals for the upcoming General Assembly session. And finally, Fairfield GOP State Senator Tony Wong joined us to weigh in on some of the governor's proposals. And we'll start off with this. I'm going to let you hear what the governor said later on in the show, but we're talking about tax relief. And of course, no drum roll necessary. You can insert a drum roll here. Insert your own little mental drum roll here. You know, I'll do it for you. There it is. Ah, the drum roll guy woke up. Here he is. Beautiful. That's a timpani. Well, it's an election year, and guess what? All of a sudden, everybody wants to give you money back, which is good. You know, there's no problem with that. I like money givebacks and tax givebacks and all that, right? A little rebate. What's wrong with that? You get a rebate when you buy a car sometimes. $1,500 consumer cash, you know? You get a rebate at certain times of the year, you know? Get $100 off all new dishwashers and refrigerators. Why don't we get rebates back at election time? Good. Well, you know, you're just buying votes. Good. Good. My vote is for sale. Damn it. I'll sell my vote to the highest bidder. Oh, the Republicans are going to give it $400 back. No, the Democrats go five. The Republicans go six. I'm going, come on. Come on. Keep it going. Yeah, I'm liking it. Yeah. So the governor today talked about tax relief. Tax cuts, tax relief, and here it is. And I'll give you this, and you tell me what you think. And part of it kind of bothers me a little bit. I'll tell you why. The governor wants to, he wants the General Assembly to go along with this. This is what he is pitching. And he's doing this because the state is, you know, doing relatively well, at least in the immediate future with the budget. You know, between the bounce back in the economy, even though we're still in the middle of the COVID thing, you know, between the bounce back there, between the COVID money coming to the state, between tax revenues being up, right? The governor is saying, hey, let's give back some money. And again, I'm all for that. Well, Paul, it's just buying votes. Like I said, I will gladly sell my vote to the highest bidder as long as it saves me some money. I'm just going to be upfront with you here. Story here by Chris Keating in the Hartford Courant. The governor has a $336 million tax cut plan. Now, that's kind of big, right? It's a third of $1 billion. We usually raise taxes in this state by, hey, a half billion here, a billion here, 2 billion here. Thank you, Dan Malloy. So what's a few billion among friends, right? But this is interesting. The governor today proposes a wide-ranging package Wednesday, but where are the tax cuts coming? That's what you have to ask yourself. Where are the tax cuts coming? You figure, wow, $336 million. Jeez, Maude, that's a third of $1 billion. Maybe they're going to cut the sales tax. No. Nope. All right, maybe they're going to cut the gasoline tax. No. But what are they going to cut? Well, we talked about this before, and I've at different times had different feelings on this with tax policy here in the state. Two cuts are being offered, one on automobiles, but hear me out on that because it's not as dandy as people think. One on automobiles and one on property taxes, which we've had tax credits before on. But one cut is on taxes, property taxes, and that disappoints me. Not that it disappoints me, but that should be part of a broader package. Why? Not everybody owns property. A lot of people rent in this state, a lot of low and middle income and even now upper income people. You see some of these all-in-one luxury apartment rentals. A lot of people don't have property that they can save property taxes on. A lot of people don't own an automobile. A lot do, but a lot don't. So, yeah, it's a third of $1 billion, but right after the break here, we'll get into this a little bit. I'll run the numbers here, according to what the governor released today and what's in the current. Well, yeah, it's nice. Property tax relief is nice. I get it. That's the big elephant in the room that, you know, we always seem to talk about. Car taxes, you know, my feeling on it. Let's have one universal car tax rate across the state. That's the only fair way to do it, right? And if you have property tax relief and somebody is renting, they're in an apartment building, small apartment building, three or four units or some big apartment building, is there any guarantee that the building owner is going to pass that savings along to you? No, of course not. You know that's not going to happen. So we'll get into the numbers on this tax savings proposal straight ahead first. And Governor Ned Lamont earlier today saying, hey, how's about it's an election year, so I offer up a third of $1 billion in tax relief. Oh, that's a lot of tax relief, Mom. Well, yeah, but let's read the details here, because it sounds good. Until you realize what it doesn't include. It doesn't include, at least at this point, it doesn't include, at least as I'm saying here, or as I'm seeing here, you know, anything to do with, and I could be wrong, but I don't see anything else here, to indicate that, geez, how about a little cut in the sales tax? Can we do that? What's wrong with that? Can we do a little? Well, I know what's wrong with it, because then nobody has the balls in Hartford to vote to increase it. Lack in the sack. You know what I mean? I mean, there's nothing there. So there's no guts to cut the sales tax, which everybody pays. Rich, poor, urban, suburban, black, white, Hispanic, male, female, whatever other gender expression you want to put in there, everybody has to pay sales tax. Why don't we do that? Why don't we do that? Not everybody owns property. Not everybody owns a vehicle or an automobile that would be taxed. In a move similar to one favored by House Republicans, the governor called for restoring eligibility for the property tax credit that's been pared back through the years as the state faced tough fiscal times. Well, whose fault is that? Now, with surpluses at more than $1 billion, the governor says the state can afford the overall tax cut package. With income limits, the property tax credit would be restored to all residential property owners. Residential property owners. A lot of folks don't own residential property, do they? Currently, the credit is limited to only those with dependents and those over the age of 65. Under the governor's plan, an additional 500,000 people would become eligible for the 2022 calendar year, and they would receive the credit when they file their taxes in April of 2023. So you're not even going to get the immediate impact on that for another year. Another year. The plan would save taxpayers a combined $53 million. That's not a lot of money. It's just not. It would be limited to single filers earning up to $109,500 and to joint filers earning up to $130,500. All the tax proposals would be subject to approval by the Democratic-controlled legislature after public hearings, yada, yada, yada. In addition, the governor wants to increase the property tax credit. Again, these are tax credits. It's not real cash. the property tax credit to a maximum of $300, up from the current $200. Big deal. The credit, created more than 25 years ago, reached $500. Remember that? Under then-Governor Jody Rell, the amount and the eligibility, however, have changed throughout the years. Why is that change? Because we spend like we're drunk. If the credit increase is okayed, an estimated 1.1 million people would save a combined $70 million out of the $336 million. Lamont told reporters on a Zoom call Wednesday, and here's, folks, this is key. Listen to this. Listen to this carefully. The governor telling reporters on a Zoom call Wednesday that he wants the tax cuts to be permanent. The legislature, however, analyzes the tax package every year and makes changes as the state's fiscal fortunes go up and down. The governor saying, quote, I'm trying to provide tax cuts that are sustainable. We'll see what we can do in the future. Now, again, back to what I said. Nobody on the General Assembly has the balls to lower the gasoline tax, which everybody pays, property owner or not, car owner or not, black, white, yellow, green, blue, alien, men, women. Everybody pays that. Everybody pays the gasoline tax. Nobody has the julions to raise, I'm sorry, to lower that. And then to look around and say, geez, we got to raise the gas tax. Yeah, we don't have enough money here. But see, they like playing around with the property taxes because the property tax is big in the suburbs, not so big in the cities. It's just not. A lot of congregate living in the cities, people who live in cities, the big blue cities, a lot of those folks, not all of them, but a lot of them are renters, and they're not concerned about the property tax. Geez, Paul, you sound awful negative. No, I'm all for tax relief. But why don't we get broad-based relief on a tax that everyone pays? How many millions of people in the state buy something every day? Cup of coffee in the morning, gasoline in the afternoon, a nice provolone sandwich for dinner, right? I got to pay tax on that sandwich, eh? You know what I'm saying? The governor's also calling for reimbursing municipalities for cutting the car tax on 1.7 million cars and trucks, which officials say translates to 77% of vehicles statewide. Again, it's 77%. It's not everything. These are not really broad-based taxes. They're targeted because it's an election year. We'll get more into the car thing straight ahead. What do you think? Do you like these tax cuts, property tax relief, and doing something finally with the car taxes? Or, like me, do you say, wait a minute, stop playing around with this. Cut the sales tax a little bit. I know, perish the thought, cut the gasoline tax a little bit. Something that everybody pays every single day. Our next guest is with us. Love to talk about this stuff, about American history, and a lot of stuff that we take for granted, like holidays and all that. Our next guest here on WICC, a 30-plus year entrepreneur. He's founded two companies. He's been a fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University, currently a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. But wait, there's more. He's been a frequent guest on national radio and television, and he has also published 250-plus articles in publications like Barron's, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Post, The Philadelphia Inquirer, The Epoch Times, The Washington Times, The Chicago Tribune, The Houston Chronicle, all over the place. Scott Powell is the guest, and the name of Scott's book, Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. Scott Powell, it's Paul Pacelli at WICC. How are you?
Paul, it's really a privilege to be on your show.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it. Well, it's a pretty incredible resume there, and you know you've done things, sailing stuff. When do you have any downtime? What do you do to relax?
Well, I think my wife would share the same views with you, because I've been sort of driven to work hard, but I do feel we're living in a very critical time. And you know, if there were three takeaways from my book, they might be that, you know, that we all need to wake up, that the preservation of our freedom is an essential component of a flourishing, flourishing both individually but as a nation. You know, if we're to reach our full potential, we need to retain our freedom. We have the freedom to be creative, to pursue new things, to discover new things. So it's very important. The second thing is, we've got to reclaim our government. Our government is really out of control. And we as citizens, this is a nation of the people, by the people, and for the people. The government was originally intended to be just that. And we need to reclaim that government. And third, you know, we're living in a very unusual time. This is Paul Revere time, and all of us, every listener, needs to sound the alarm, because time is running out on our country.
You focus here, Scott. You say how the national holidays tell an amazing story about who we are. Why did you decide to write the book from that angle, focusing on the national holidays as a narrative here?
Well, sometimes, you know, we stumble into things, or great things come from unplanned earlier causality. In my case, you know, I was a writer, and I wrote on public policy and in economics, because I have a PhD in economics. So the Discovery Institute pushed me to write on economic issues and as they affect public policy. But I had this appreciation for our history, and so I thought, as holidays came up, you know, I ought to write a holiday piece. So I ended up writing one or two. And they were really well received, and I researched them thoroughly, because that's my nature. I don't want to repeat what people already know. I want to introduce them to things they don't know. So over the course of 3 or 4 years, I ended up writing on every holiday of the United States, all of the national holidays, plus I added Constitution Day to the mix. It's not a federal holiday, but it's perhaps our most important national observance holiday. And I had a lot of readers who said to me, you know, Scott, I always learned amazing new things about our country through your holiday articles. You need to write a book. And I deferred it. I said, no. But then at the end of 2019, I just say a little voice came. You know, sometimes we don't even know where they come from. But I that voice was, you know, you got to write that book. You got to write that book. So I thought about it, and I said, you know, I really should. And so I dedicated starting that in January of 2020. I had no idea what we were in for with COVID-19 and then the BLM and the Antifa craziness and the tearing down of statues and our heritage, our monuments and so forth, which was really an attack on America. So I realized when that happened that, gee, you know, that voice is important to listen to that voice, because this book addresses all of what we're going through, and it provides answers to the problems.
Scott Powell is the guest. Scott, hang on. We'll be right back with you, sir. Scott Powell is the guest. Name of the book, by the way, comes out this coming March 8th in hardcover 2022. Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. Again, out in hardcover early March, March 8th of this year. More with Scott Powell after traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And we continue with author Scott Powell. Name of the book, Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. And Scott, I think it was such a good idea to do this on your part, because how many millions of us, every year, we look at the holiday calendar and we say, oh, another day off from work, another day off from school. Oh, look at that. The holiday's on a Monday, so I can go take that little mini vacation on Sunday, which is great. But none of us really pause and think, Scott, about what that holiday is or why we have it.
That's right. And we have such an incredible history wrapped up in our holidays. So the book really is not about the holidays per se, although I do cover every single holiday, and I added Constitution Day to the mix. Mm. But I really use the holidays as a way of telling the story of America. And it's very different than most history books. Most history books are linear. So authors tend to to write about the what, the when, the where, and who was involved, right? My book is a little different in that I tell the why. I address the why. Why did things happen the way they did? Why did the pilgrims come to America? You know, why did Columbus, what motivated Columbus? What's behind the ideas of the Declaration and the Constitution? Mm-hmm. And these are incredible stories. I kind of stumbled into writing the book because of what people said to me. They said, you know, you tell all these unique stories. I never knew this about American history. You need to write a book. Well, I answered that call, and in doing more research as I wrote the book, I was absolutely blown away by things that I discovered.
Like Scott, for instance, like what? Because a lot of us think we know this stuff, but give me an example or two of what made you go, wow, I never knew that.
Okay, well, let's take Memorial Day. That's coming up in May. I could choose President's Day because that's coming up in a couple of weeks, and I'll address that too. But let's take Memorial Day. Memorial Day is a holiday that grew out of the Civil War, but it's to remember all those that gave their lives for the cause, for the cause of freedom. and it was modified to include and modernized, if you will, because it really wasn't made in an official holiday until the 20th century, even though it came out of the Civil War. Mm-hmm. So I chose to write about one of the people I chose to write about in Memorial Day was Douglas MacArthur, who was, a great military general. And he had a distinction of serving in three wars, the First World War, the Second World War, and the Korean War. Years ago, I had bought his book, Reminiscences. Mm-hmm. That's his biography. He wrote it. But I never had time to read it. And I was in the midst of writing, and I was writing about MacArthur. I said, my goodness, I've got his autobiography on my shelf. Let me go look. So I picked it up, and I was interested to learn about what he did in Japan. I'd heard that he was a Christian. So I looked up Christianity in the book, and then I was led right to a section of the book that described what he did. He was overseeing Japan after it had been devastated. Two atomic bombs had been dropped. People were dismayed. And, of course, the Japanese people thought that they couldn't lose the war. You know, they had the Shinto god had ordained their emperor, and they were destined to rule the world. They were a superior race, the whole nine yards. It was a narrative. It was a Japanese narrative. And the war, destroyed that narrative. They were despondent. Suicide rates were going way up. MacArthur answered what he saw. And of course, he was involved with the administration of rebuilding and restructuring their government. But he reached out to Christian missionaries around the world. He said, we need as many Christian missionaries as can be found to come to Japan. He then got the Bible League to publish 10 million Bibles in Japanese to deliver to the Japanese people. Now later, after the Korean War, he was interviewed by U.S. News and World Report, and he was asked the question, you had such a distinguished military career. What was the most meaningful and important thing that you did in your career? Mm-hmm. You know what his answer was? It was the spiritual stewardship in Japan.
Yeah.
That was the most meaningful. Now that's a story very few people probably have heard. The fact is that what he accomplished and the goodwill that was extended has survived all these years.
Yeah.
Governments have come and gone, but the Japanese have looked to us as friends, as reliable allies. We've had a wonderful relationship with Japan for this whole time. Mm-hmm. And so that's just a little example. Now, on President's Day, President's Day is rather unique in that, first of all, it celebrates two of our presidents. And interestingly, both Washington and Lincoln they foresaw and they wrote and spoke about it. They said that, you know, America would never be taken over by a foreign power. There wouldn't be a foreign invasion. If America was to fall, then it wouldn't happen from a foreign invasion. Rather, both of them said America would fall from an internal internal division,
yeah,
an internal challenge. And that's exactly the time in which we're living right now.
Yeah. Scott, good luck with this. This is great. I'm a big history buff, elections, and it's just this type of book, I think, that Americans have to get and read, because as much as we know about this stuff, we don't. There are still backstories and side stories. The name of the book is Rediscovering America, How the National Holidays Tell an Amazing Story About Who We Are. Comes out March 8th, 2022, this year, and you can get it.
Paul, if I could.
Sure.
It's really great for your listeners to take advantage of the pre-sale period.
Okay.
The book is for sale now. It's in what's known as pre-sale.
Okay.
And what the publishers do at the end of the pre-sale period, they add up how many books were sold in pre-sale, and then they print 5 or 6 times that number of books.
Got it.
There are supply constraints now with publishing, with printing and binding,
mm-hmm.
So all the print runs are smaller. And if we're to make this book really successful, I would really appreciate people buying the book during pre-sale,
okay,
because it'll drive a larger print run and we'll get the word out how we can turn this country around.
All right, and I see it on Amazon here.
Amazon, yep. Scott S. Powell,
okay.
Rediscovering America.
And do you have a website?
Comes up.
Do you have a website, Scott? What is that?
It's rediscoveringamerica.net.
All right, we'll check it out. Scott, thank you. Rediscoveringamerica.net, or go to Amazon. Scott Powell, we thank you, sir. Good luck, and we'll chat down the road. Thanks, Scott.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. All right, rediscoveringamerica.net, or pick it up at amazon.com. Giving us his thoughts on a big story from yesterday. Yeah, kind of a football-related story, but maybe there are aspects of this that millions of people look at from the workplace and say, know the feeling, coach. There it is. Of course, Brian Flores filing a class action lawsuit against the National Football League regarding minority hiring practices. He's also suing the New York Giants, saying basically he was subjected to a sham interview. It's a 60-page lawsuit. It's got lots of nooks and crannies and crevices. And talking about this is our next guest. He represents employees and employers in several manners, including age discrimination, disability, family responsibilities, wrongful termination, and the like. He's also an adjunct professor of law, Quinnipiac University Law School, and is currently, of course, part of a law firm that we know about right here on the radio station, Mitchell and Sheehan. Attorney Gary Phelan joins us to talk about that. Hey, Gary, it's Paul at WICC. How are you?
Good, Paul. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Well, Gary, I'm sure you may have perused a little of this in the news, and I was reading the PDF of the suit so far. Lots of things to peel back in this, Gary, but I guess the crux of this, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you have Brian Flores, the former coach of the Dolphins, saying, yeah, that whole thing about bringing me in for an interview under the so-called Rooney Rule was kind of a sham. Now, the Giants are saying no, this is all alleged. What do you make of this lawsuit?
Oh, this has the potential to be a groundbreaking lawsuit, because it's really not just alleging the circumstances with respect to Brian Flores, but really kind of a systemic history in the NFL of discriminating based on race, in particular with respect to the Rooney Rule, that the which has basically been a practice for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Of hiring or interviewing at least one black candidate for head coach and then for other higher level positions, that it's just really cosmetic. It has more to do with public relations. So there's a whole lot at stake here in this lawsuit. And, beyond just Brian Flores, as he said, you know, even though he's risking his coaching career, that there's a lot more at stake here than just his coaching career.
Yeah, and this whole thing, you know, the Rooney Rule, you're right, Gary, it's been on the books. There's very light enforcement. There's a cash fine. You may lose a draft pick here or there. But doesn't this, Gary, reflect a larger sticky situation here with companies and people have known over the years, hey, you know, shh, I got the job. They just have to interview other people, or I had no shot for this gig, but they brought me in for an interview just to fill out a form. That's kind of also what people may pull out of this, huh?
Well, you know, that's possible, but on the other hand, it's a, you know, it's a catalyst for change if it's done correctly. Part of the problem is often with respect to hiring is people tend to hire people who look like themselves. And so this is a, you know, the Rooney Rule, which actually has been a, kind of incorporated within several industries. Mm-hmm. But over time, you would think the, you know, the statistics would improve. In this case, you know, back when this was implemented, there were three black head coaches in the NFL. Right now, there's one. And the, you know, you have a sort of a kind of a factual background where it really does seem like there's discrimination based on race, where you have, you know, 70% of players are black and you have such a small percentage at general, you know, general manager, offensive coordinator, defense coordinator, and head coach low levels of black coaches. There's something wrong there. And so what is there to do about it?
Gary, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Good thoughts here. Let's continue this in just a second. I'll put you on hold here for just a second. Gary Phelan is the guest, attorney at law, Mitchell & Sheehan, PC, also adjunct professor, Quinnipiac University School of Law. Back to a Gary momentarily. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And the NFL was all giddy the other day when the viewership numbers for championship weekend came out. Look at that, 50, 60 million people watching, and now they ain't so happy. Class action lawsuit filed yesterday by former Miami Dolphins head coach Brian Flores. A lot of aspects to this lawsuit, saying, A, that the interviewing process, the Rooney Rule, was basically just a sham interview for him, and other factors as well, including that he was bad-mouthed by his previous employer, the Miami Dolphins. Gary Phelan, attorney at law. A few more minutes with him. He's at Mitchell & Sheehan, PC, and also teaches law, employment law, wrongful termination, all that, at the Quinnipiac University School of Law. And Gary, yeah, you do have the other aspects of this. And, you know, I guess Flores here in the lawsuit is saying, hey, this one just makes my eyes roll back. Because I wouldn't essentially tank games, Gary, for $100,000 a game from my crazy owner, then he starts bad-mouthing me about, man, how do you peel that back?
Well, I think it's an example of what often happens, particularly in publicized lawsuits, you know, of dirty laundry, that will often come out in the course of a lawsuit. And that, you know, that's an example where he is saying that he Brian Flores, that he was defamed and essentially blackballed within the NFL because he refused to lose games where he says he was offered $100,000 per game to lose because the Dolphins owner was trying to get the top draft pick.
Gary, you know, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think one thing that might be on Brian Flores' side here, and you tell me whether if this got to court, this would be an argument here. A lot of people, Gary, were floored when Brian Flores was fired. And a lot of people were floored that even this far in the hiring process, up until yesterday, he wasn't really a serious candidate for any of the other jobs. He thought he was in line for the Giants job, didn't get it. Is this the kind of thing, Gary, if you were with this, if you were defending him in court and pushing his side of the story, is this, Gary, kind of a thing? Well, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck thing, it's a duck. You know what I mean?
I think it is, and you know, in many ways, he's an ideal plaintiff. You know, you're talking about the Dolphins. He was on, you know, just had two winning seasons. I know, like most sports fans, I was shocked when I heard his name on the, you know, the day after the NFL season, where a lot of losing teams fire their coaches. when I heard him, it's like, wait a minute, they just won eight of their last nine games.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense. On the other hand, what you have is the hire, you know, that employment cases involving failure to hire on a discriminatory basis are probably the hardest cases, because so much of the hiring process is based on subjectivity. It's not just, you know, what does your resume say? And even for a coach, it's not just wins and losses. There's so much more, like leadership skills. And so that's going to be, you know, that's going to be hard to prove. I think it can. From the big picture, I don't think this case will ever get to court, because I think in many ways the NFL has to settle this.
Yeah, I was just going to...
The brand is just too important, and the marketplace and the impact on their reputation is too potentially damaging that they really have to resolve this in a way that doesn't kind of linger for the next few years.
Yeah, and again, they did settle Gary, you know, with Colin Kaepernick, to, you know, despite what he did and the arguments back and forth and the finger pointing. So yeah, that was going to be my next question. Somebody's going to write a check here, right? I mean, is that what you would think? And something coming from the league, would the Giants have to do that too? Could he go after all of these defendants individually?
Probably, you know, he's going after the teams, probably not individually. On the other hand, I don't think it's just going to be like the typical lawsuit where you write a check. One of the things they're seeking in the lawsuit that I think is a very creative idea is to have players involved in the hiring process and other coaches. That would be, you know, so you have more than just the, you know, the white owner who is deciding whom to hire. And so there could be, and this really could be in many ways, if it's resolved correctly, could become kind of something that other industries look to, because clearly using the Rooney Rule has not succeeded. And so this could be a lot, you know, result in really positive change, not only for the NFL, but in all industries, because anything the NFL does is going to be high profile.
Sure. And Gary, finally, you know, the teams are in a tough position, though, aren't they? Because let's say they fire a coach, you know, with cause, not because of what Brian Flores in his situation did with him and the owner, but let's just say they fired a lousy coach. And then all of a sudden, Gary, so-and-so coach is available, like Jim Harbaugh's out there right now. Everybody's saying, oh, my God, hire Harbaugh, back up the truck. Well, a team that just fired a coach, Gary, that has money can say, oh, God, that's our dream candidate. But again, they will have to bring in, you know, minority candidates, you know, go through this process. And in the end, Gary, they're going to be people who are going to say, yeah, but you knew they were going to hire Harbaugh all the time. I mean, it there is a difficulty there, isn't there, to make it look genuine.
Well, in individual cases, that might be the case. But over time, it should result in change. If you compare it, for example, to the NBA, which has more black head coaches,
sure,
is that with the number of candidates, you know, generally statistically, you're going to have more and more that are hired, and that the more they, you know, get their foot in the door, so to speak. So I think that on an individual basis, perhaps, you know, with a high profile candidate like Harbaugh. But over time, you should definitely see improvement, and that doesn't seem to be happening.
All right. Gary Phelan, attorney at law, adjunct professor, Quinnipiac University School of Law, and he's part of the Mitchell and Sheehan Law Firm, attorneys at law. Gary, thank you. Appreciate the time today. I know you're probably busy, but thanks for doing it. We appreciate it. We'll talk down the road. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate it. Gary Phelan, Mitchell and Sheehan PC. So, again, and he said kind of what I figured an attorney would say here, that the league, they can't let this get to court. Oh, my God. Can you imagine if you get an extended trial with the league and the Giants and the Dolphins and the Dolphins owner? Oh, can you imagine the pundits and the gas bags on cable sports and sports talk radio? Oh, my God, no. I will tell you something. He's going to coach again. I know people are saying, well, he, no. there will be a team. There will be a team maybe in a progressive market. I don't know, Seattle, Baltimore, something like that, who'll say, you know what? The league wrote him a check. They knew he was wrong, or that they were wrong, and he was right. Good on him. He's got his money, and we're going to bring him in to coach and give him a five-year contract. Some team will do that, and they'll look magnanimous for it. They will.
Expanding that to absolutely everybody, increasing the tax credit by about 50% from $200 to $300. You know, the property tax is pretty relentless. You pay it in good times, you pay it in bad times. It particularly hits the middle class hard, and we're doing everything we can to mitigate that, you know, as best we can. And on the lowering the mill rate, let me tell you what that means when it comes to cars. It's just insane the way it's set up right now that, you know, you could have a Honda in Hartford and you're paying higher property tax on it than you are for a Hummer in Heartland or Harwinton. And that's just the nature of the fact that you have a higher property tax rate in some of our cities than you do in other places because they don't have the same tax base. So thanks to Melissa and the efforts of our policy team, we're going to be able to significantly reduce that gap, represent a 30, 40% cut in your car tax. And I'd like to think that that makes a significant difference. The final one up there you see on the screen is a student loan tax credit. I'm doing everything I can to make sure the best and the brightest are getting educated here in the state of Connecticut, stay in the state of Connecticut, and doing what I can to help out our businesses as well, especially the small businesses. So right now, if you're graduating from Connecticut school, you have a real incentive to stay here in Connecticut because you go to a Connecticut-based business and our tax cut says that we're going to give you a credit. I think it's up to $3,250 per year, a 50% credit to our businesses that start to forgive your student loan. I'd like to think that it helps our small businesses. It's a refundable credit. And it also reminds our students, stick around Connecticut. There are really good opportunities here, and you can graduate over a period of time not having to pay any student debt. But Melissa, we wouldn't have been able to do it without your stewardship managing us through these last 3 years. Look where we've come from, $3 to $4 billion deficit, to figuring out how we can appropriately invest our surplus, starting with tax cuts. And that's what you'll be presenting to all the appropriate committees starting probably tomorrow.
The governor comes out today and says, listen, we want to extend some property tax relief, which is good. No, nobody's arguing against that. He also says, listen, and this is a pet peeve of mine, the way we tax cars in this state is just dumb. A lot of states don't tax them at all. And then some states, a lot of states have a universal mill rate. So he's trying to fix that up with, you know, making it easier on people in some cities and then giving the state to kick back the money. But if you don't own a car and you don't own any other property, where's the tax help? Republican State Senator Tony Wong is with us to maybe answer that question. Tony, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm great, Paul. It must be an election year when we're talking about tax breaks.
Well, you know what, Tony? Like I said before, listen, if my car dealership can say, hey, here's $1,500 back, or if my big box retailer can say, hey, $300 back on on a new washer, I'm good with that, Tony. But here's my point. I want broad-based tax relief. And let me ask you the question. So, Tony, I don't own any property. I'm a renter. I'm not saying I am, but put me in this situation. I'm a renter, and I take the bus. I don't own a car. Where's my tax relief?
There aren't. And let's be clear. As we say this, we do need to have tax relief because the Connecticut resident are being driven out. The working middle class is unable to afford anything in our state and are forced to leave the state. But that being said, you know, this is, again, an election year scheme. I mean, it has gone from Roland to Rell to Malloy. Every year there's an election year for governor. There's an idea of a tax relief. Yeah. Now, I'm looking at the details, which are very lacking, but what I'm seeing is, yes, we do have a surplus. And yes, we have really done a good job because 4 years ago, we had an 18-18 tie in the Senate that put in some volatility caps. But here's a problem. People have a short memory because we used nearly $2 billion of federal ARPA relief, one-time relief, to balance our budget to say we don't have a tax increase. And we've got excess money that went into our municipalities, that went into our schools, that went into addressing every aspect of our lives in Connecticut. Yes, we're happy because the federal government has written a check.
Mm-hmm.
We have not made structural changes in how it's sustainable. But we got the surplus. We don't know what to do with it. We've got itchy fingers that say, let's give it back to people. But when we really have no structural change, we have not changed government. And people have short memories again. There was a change in our mill rate for motor vehicle taxes. And the people that got hurt the most were our urban centers
sure.
that lost money.
Yeah.
They were supposed to get money back like this plan supposedly does that's being proposed. Our cities, Bridgeport, lost some significant money because guess what? The motor vehicle tax, based upon mill rate, is absolutely unfair. But it is also money that our municipalities get to operate their budget. So you want to change it? I'm going to tell you, Bridgeport, Fairfield, Greenwich, and Waterbury, every municipality is going to say, whoa, 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 whoa. We can't do without this money. It looks great on paper. It sounds great on the circuit. But at the end of the day, the devil's in the detail. And here's the problem. It is the perfect phrase of robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Tony, one more thing before we let you go here. We'll squeeze by time. There was a news conference, I believe, today about health insurance and health care. Fill us in on that, if you can.
Well, another example of the middle class being squeezed and being unable to afford the necessary needs that they have. So health insurance is important in this day and age of health care concerns. We are proposing initiatives like reinsurance, benchmarking. These are issues that have been raised that we've adopted in some way. What we did this afternoon was to say, let's really fully embrace it. Let's use the money that we have to be able to divert and use a proven model of reinsurance to reduce costs. That's been demonstrated to save people money. And two, use benchmarking, which is a program that Massachusetts has had since 2012. We can learn from what they've done and be able to save millions of dollars, which goes right into the pocket of reduced premiums to people. We also looked at new novel ways of addressing prescription drug costs. But the most important part we wanted to bring out is transparency, accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Where is all that money? Again, we talked about this on a federal grant money. Where is all this money going? There's no accountability. There's no transparency. So we were looking and saying, hey, if we really want to reduce costs, let's get to some structural changes so it's sustainable. The governor emphasized, quote, his tax cut is sustainable. But the reality is we're using borrowed money. And do people remember he was still looking to put in tolls to pay for transportation costs that we forgot to put money into? Again, remember the phrase, robbing Peter to pay Paul is unfortunately the proverbial game of election year politics.
All right, Tony, thank you. Tony Wong, we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul. Have a great day.
All right, you too, Tony.